Batter Up.
Hello, listeners. Welcome back to A Pod of Their Own. This is episode 196 of A Pod of Their Own. I am Allison McCaig, and I am joined this week by my lovely co-hosts, Linda Servich. Hello, Linda.
Hey, Allison.
And Maggie Wiggin. Hello, Maggie.
Hi, Allison.
Since we recorded last week, things have dramatically improved for the Mets since their 0-5, 0-6 start or whatever it was. They took 2 out of 3 from the Braves and the surging Royals and are now within one game of clawing their way back to 500.
It sure is nice to have fun again.
Yeah, I forgot what that feels like.
Ever deliver like consistent winning excellence, but the fun was really not there, and now it really is there, along with some quantity of winning excellence, but gotta have that fun.
Yeah. The main thing that's happened is that they started hitting. Like, they weren't hitting at
all.
That'll
do.
And now they're hitting a little bit. Namely, Pete Alonso is tearing the cover off the ball, and Brandon Nimmo, who wasn't hitting at all.
Player of the week, Pete Alonso.
Indeed. National League Player of the Week, Pete Alonso. And Brandon Nimmo, who wasn't hitting at all, is now hitting, which is great. And DJ Stewart, who wasn't hitting literally at all, like zero hits, finally has broken out and become a Braves destroyer.
He broke out when we were podcasting.
Indeed, yes.
We have the evidence that he hit.
Yes, we our live reactions to DJ Stewart hitting against the Braves. He had 2 home runs in that series. He's been hitting finally and maybe saved his job. We'll see how things go, but he may have saved his job because before it seemed like once JD Martinez was ready, it was really going to be DJ Stewart who was going to lose his roster spot because they were kind of redundant and DJ Stewart wasn't hitting. But if DJ Stewart's hitting, then, you know, it kind of means that perhaps Zach Short might lose his roster spot. We shall
Although
see.
There's plenty of time for those playing samples to get really big because JD Martinez isn't doing anything.
No.
He's swinging the bat.
His
today,
current status is nope.
Today he starts swinging the bat. So he is still experiencing lower back soreness, which is a symptom of, you know, being
hard same. Hard
36 same. Years old or however old he is. he got a cortisone injection for that. And he said that he's had like lower back issues before and the cortisone injections have helped in the past with this.
JD, if you're listening, tell me about these cortisone injections.
Yeah, right. How do we get one of these? Cortisone injections must be nice. He, you know, what was previously like, oh, he's gonna be shut down for a few days has become like 2 weeks now of like no baseball activity until literally today.
Could have known who could have possibly never predicted.
Yeah. I guess other sort of like notes is that Jeff McNeil has swung the bat much better this week. He looks like Jeff McNeil again, which is really nice because I don't like it when Jeff McNeil doesn't look like Jeff McNeil. It's very frustrating. And especially
and it's been
because
like a year and a half.
Yeah.
Yes. But finally, he's starting to hit the ball to all fields. Very much like 2-strike hitting, fighting pitches off, sort of Jeff McNeil that we know and love, not striking out like barely at all. I think he has 2 strikeouts in the past week, weeks worth of games. So that's really good. And Brett Beatty remains consistent and has been the most consistent hitter for the Mets. I mean,
shut me up, Brett Beatty.
Shut all of us up.
I was not a believer.
With so much distaste in my mouth for so long, and I apologize.
Yeah, he's just really good.
Yeah, I was gonna say, and the exuberance is there too. Like, he's having fun again, which is nice to see.
Yeah, I think that he has sort of like, once you relax and you produce a little bit and you realize that you actually do belong in the major leagues after all, like, it enables you to like let loose and have fun a little bit. And I think that's what's finally happening for him, which is nice. It's nice to see him like goof off with everybody else and have fun. And it's been nice to see, you know, the effects of Francisco Lindor taking him under his wing, I think, on the defensive side of the ball, and also just like emotionally and like the way he's been like excited and cheering and showing his personality on the field.
I think it's also just like, I think he just wasn't ready. Like, he's really young still. It's a big jump. There's a lot going on. And I don't think he was ready. I think, you know, maybe the bat was there. I don't think it was. And, you know, it was easy to kind of look at everything that happened last year with the Mets and who was up and who was down. It's just sort of like a big mess. But also, I just think he needed to be down in the minors for another year. I think he needed it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And also, I think it helps having Francisco Alvarez, too.
Mm-hmm.
They lean on each other a lot, and they seem really close. So I think having that support system there is also good for him.
It's just it's a deeper lineup.
Yeah. I was going to say, the two of them hitting in the middle of the lineup, like, it's kind of like a death by a thousand paper cuts lineup. Like, they just keep going, and you don't, when they're on, they're kind of relentless.
Yeah. I mean, now that the bottom of the lineup has still looked bleak at times, but now that Harrison Bader is also finally hitting, there is some, like, you know, consistency up and down the lineup.
They at least, I feel like what the most important part is getting the regulars going, because they are the least replaceable, and that's what they're doing. Now, the downside is that the bench guys are still not there yet, but at the same time, I mean, like DJ Stewart turned it around right quick, and it's early yet, and those are ultimately the guys that they can replace, so...
Yeah. And also, not to be overlooked, I think, is Starling Marte, too.
Yeah. He's been consistent alongside Brett Beatty. He's getting hits at the top of the order again, which is nice, because it was kind of... I was wondering how much longer Mendoza would be sticking with him at the top of the lineup without dropping him down, but he's actually been producing, which has been nice. He and Brett Beatty have been the Mets' two most consistent hitters in the first month of the season so far. Obviously, other guys have like been hotter than those two during like individual like few game stretches, but those two have stayed consistent the whole time.
And Marte's a stolen base threat too.
Yes,
which he's been doing. Him and Bader, I think, have both been doing it. So that's always good to have. Ah, Pete.
Yeah. I also noted that you know, amidst all of this, Francisco Lindor is still struggling mightily, but he does have two hits tonight as we record this on Monday evening.
Seems like he's just struggling from the left side.
It's really mostly the left side.
From the right side.
Yeah. He looks solid on the right side. He's making a lot of contact on both sides of the plate. He's actually not striking out a ton, but on the left side, it's just been like horrible, weak contact. And on the right side, he's just hitting the ball so much harder.
He was on the right side, he was hitting into so much hard luck there for a while.
That was why
his start looked so incredibly bleak, was like he was definitely having some struggles from the left, still is, but the right also was just like BABIP, BABIP, BABIP all game, every game.
Yep. And that at least is hopefully turning around for him a little bit. But he has always been a slower starter from the left side. Like on the left side, it always takes him a while to heat up for some reason. So maybe we just got to wait it out, and he'll start getting his knocks from the left side too. But for now, the left side looks pretty bad.
he looks good from the right side.
Yeah. He looks like Francisco Lindor on the right side.
He does.
Absolutely. But yeah, he's just like not hitting from the left side at all. But yeah, it's not good. But it's hopefully I'm not worried about it. I'm still not worried about it. He looks like Francisco Lindor for the
as long as he's healthy, he'll figure it out.
Why'd you say that out loud, Linda? I'm just saying.
He is healthy.
I wouldn't have said it.
Francisco Lindor is totally fine and will be totally fine.
Yes.
The end.
Yes. Another like major highlight during this like good stretch of games that the Mets have had is that Jose Budo has been a revelation. in the rotation. He pitched great yesterday. Someone understood the assignment on Doc Gooden's number retirement day. And threw
the whole technically did yesterday.
Yeah, the Mets pitched great yesterday. Jose Budo pitched six scoreless innings. The Mets have three quality starts so far, and Jose Budo has two of them. So, and
that says a lot.
Well, this is a replay of last year, how nobody was going deep into games until the end of April. The bullpen was taxed early. It's different characters, but same story.
Yeah, I think that this year the difference is that clearly the David Stearns Mets are much more willing to churn the roster more quickly.
Yeah, true.
They DFA'd Julio Teheran immediately, despite the fact that they gave him real money. Though I didn't realize it was I didn't realize it was a non-guaranteed contract at the time. I thought it was guaranteed $2.5 million, which I was like, okay, go off, Steve. I wouldn't have done that, but sure, the Mets, you can afford to do that.
Bold move,
but okay. Francisco Alvarez just walked and the Mets scored their first run.
Yay!
So now they're only down three to one.
Beatty followed up what Lindor hit because Pete popped up. But they kept the line moving. So now the pressure
must be hurting from carrying the Player of the Week trophy.
Yes, indeed.
He should just really put down the trophy.
Yes.
David Stearns Mets seem willing to churn the roster very quickly. They cut bait with Julio Teheran immediately after he had one bad start. And I mean, he looked washed, like it was the right thing to do. And clearly Jose Budo is better than him.
Yes.
So they made the right choice there. They have, they have called guys up and optioned them back down really quickly. They seem so far, at least, to have the depth to be able to do that, which is nice. So they DFA'd Michael Tonkin really quickly, even though he had a major league deal initially. And so, yeah, it's these sorts of things, and they seem to be willing to do it. So
we haven't even seen the Cherv yet.
No.
We have not.
And he's been Italian fantastic. Yogini.
He's been great. Italian Yogini would be like, Yogini.
His results have been there. He's pitched well. Yeah. His velocity is down, which is concerning. But a lot of people's velocity has been down, but that's because everyone's getting hurt.
It's also April in Syracuse, so
yes,
I don't know.
It's cold.
Yeah. I don't know if we should just worry about that just yet, because he's still getting out.
Yeah.
He was probably distracted by the eclipse. It happens.
It does. He was probably very excited, gotta come down
one with
that
the
high.
Universe. Yeah.
Maybe he was like, you don't know what he saw, because we still don't know what Brandon Nimmo saw when he looked into the eyes of the sun.
Probably saw Jesus, Linda. I'm sorry. Like, I feel like if I could put money on that right now, I would.
It was definitely Jesus.
Regarding Jose Budo's
they tagged up because it was a short foot, it was a short pop up, but they tagged up anyway.
Rally Pimp is there, which is a good sign. But I saw in play runs is all I saw, so I was like, good. It's 3-2 now, so that's good.
But it was a super short pop up, so I didn't think they were gonna make it, but they made it.
Good. Mets still have two men on.
They just gotta be better base runners, and right now they seem to be doing it. They've been doing better the last couple of years, but I still feel like it's one of those places that they've always just like, why not just get a little better at base running? Upgrade.
Fundies.
I mean, Brandon Nimmo too has stolen a couple of bases early, although each time he should have been out by a mile, and he's gotten lucky like three different times because it's either been a terrible throw or a bad tag. It's been
because he saw Jesus in the eclipse.
It's true. I mean, I will say, I will repeat that ever since Dark Brandon has risen, he has been hitting the cover off the ball since Comrade Brandon emerged. That's all I'm saying.
It's
all I'm saying.
There's been a lot to conspire to make Brandon Nimmo go on this tear. Like, the stars literally aligned for this.
It's true. So, yeah, one more small thing to note about Jose Budo is that Lance Brozdowski, a, like, player dev guy, noted on Twitter a subtle change in Budo's arm angle from, you know, last year to this year that's clearly yielding results. You know, he's got a better vertical break, more elevation, and, you know, all the I don't know. There's ways to use Stuff Plus and those sorts of, like, models, but I think people put a little too much stock in them. But, you know, he's getting more whiffs on his pitches that way. And it's just,
who doesn't love a subtle change in a guy's arm angle?
Exactly. And I mean, it's clearly getting results. And so that is something that I know we've talked about on this podcast, and I know others who talk about the Mets a lot have talked about this. Cause, like, you know, the coaching staff has been something that, while the Mets have, you know, clearly advanced in terms of, like, sabermetrics and, like, the hiring of David Stearns and hiring of, like, front office guys who are more analytically driven, and player dev and these sorts of things, the coaching staff hires slash keeping guys on the coaching staff, like, people have questioned whether that has caught up with the rest of the organization. But here is something I think that the Mets can point to when it comes to Budo, at least in the early going, they can point to as a coaching success for Jeremy Hefner, because this is clearly his influence. And so I think that that is a good thing.
And we've talked before about how Hefner has been notably lacking in wins in terms of, like, getting the good out of pitchers.
Yeah. So if he can get the good out of Jose Budo, and Jose Budo can be, like, a legit, like, I don't think anybody thinks that he is, like, an ace caliber pitcher. That was never his ceiling. But he had a ceiling as, like, a middle rotation starter. And if they can get that out of him, and that's kind of what he's been so far, that is a huge win for the Mets.
Gives you some hope about how they will handle Christian Scott, who is also looking really good.
Yes. Well, they're going to need somebody in the rotation next year. So if it's, DJ Stewart just
King. Gum King. He just did a double.
Did he do it?
He did.
Yeah. Yay, our beautiful DJ Gum Stewart. King just hit
another,
a double.
Another candidate for the Shut Maggie Up Award.
Yep. Yeah, seriously. DJ Stewart.
I mean, a lot of dirt, man.
Yeah. DJ Stewart, man. He's hitting finally. And it's beautiful. We love to see it.
Are they all dingers?
Are they all dingers? No. He just said he hit a double.
Okay. Yes. Oh, did Bader just get hit?
Yeah, he did. Yeah, Bader just got hit by a pitch. Yep.
Oops.
Yeah.
This is what they
have stormed back in this game.
Yeah, they're kind of MO. Like, I mean, I can hit by pitches was their MO.
It is still their MO,
hey,
yes.
That was a great year that was their MO. I mean, I recognize that it's been their MO in a lot of ways for a while, but, like, that one year was sort of like the wild one, and it worked for them.
I think in the early going, the Mets do still lead the league in hit by pitches this year, too. I'm going to check that live.
That's just wild.
Very interesting radio here.
Even without Mark Canha on the roster, that would be super
team
impressive.
Batting stats.
But with Brandon Nimmo.
Who's going to be the Mark Canha then?
Brandon Nimmo, the Mark Canha of the New York Mets.
Didn't he drive in a run by getting hit by a pitch?
That sounds like him.
Yeah.
Can you imagine how ran he? I mean, you were probably watching. I missed it. But can you imagine how fast he ran to first on that one? Woo!
Oh, wow. The Mets do not lead the league in hit by pitches. It's not even, like, close, actually. I mean, they're eighth, but, like, they're in, like, a three-way tie. So it's really, like, they're
fifth through eighth.
Yeah.
But just add one, because we just had Bader. So does that one bump them up?
Yeah, probably. One more. It moves them up a spot and ties them for fourth, fifth. And then,
nice.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, but
top five.
I guess that was the 10th hit by pitch by the Mets, but the Guardians have been hit 17 times already.
Jeez. Good Lord.
How?
Did he beat it?
Someone investigate that.
Yeah, seriously.
I was going to say, is Buck secretly working for the Guardians?
Possibly.
Miss you, Buck.
Yeah.
I like to imagine that he's maybe like a part-time caretaker for Francisco Lindor's children.
Yes. Seriously. And he's watching at home, and every time the Mets get hit by a pitch, he makes the same face that he made in the dugout.
Aggravated, annoyed face.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
I'd like to imagine that Buck doesn't watch too many Mets games. I don't think he needs to do that to himself.
No.
I feel like he could do better things.
So in wider baseball news this week, the biggest story in baseball this week is regarding an update in the Ipe Mizuhara Shohei Ohtani gambling scandal. So the criminal complaint from the U.S. government was released this past week, and it is a doozy. It is over 30 pages long. And
it's super interesting, full of a ton of details.
Little nuggets.
Like stories, tales.
Oh, yeah. Like, this is like, it's like a movie script, really. Like, if you haven't read it.
I don't think you could even make it a movie. It would be like, come on, that's ridiculous.
I know.
Like, that doesn't make sense.
The biggest star in baseball is taken down by his translator in a gambling scheme. I mean, it's insane.
I mean, my
and
biggest.
It's totally true.
It's all totally true.
Every word.
If you haven't read the criminal complaint, I sincerely recommend you read it because it's like actually like high drama entertainment to read. It's not like boring like most legal documents are. It is actually like interesting to go through.
I haven't read a lot of legal documents, but this is definitely like top three.
Yeah.
Well, at one point, I was getting like mafia vibes off.
Oh,
of it.
It's definitely a mob movie.
Well, and like, okay, so I guess part of what became really clear from the complaint is that, and part of what explains one of the things that was weird is that the bookies really thought that he was covering for Ohtani.
Yes.
That Ohtani was the gambler and he was the middleman to kind of protect Ohtani. And that explains how he was able to run up these tabs, which are insane, but also like I feel like again a lot of people who have not really gotten a sense of what a full-blown gambling addiction can look like, this is where there's a little bit of an education happening, because like I think if most regular people could get access to that kind of money and had a gambling addiction, they would spend that kind of money. Like it doesn't seem like that high a number in that context at all.
Yeah, if you want to educate yourself on what gambling addiction looks like, this is Exhibit A.
Is people like selling their parents' house. Like it's wild.
I mean, he, you know,
I don't know that he did. I don't think he did. I'm saying like that is the kind of thing that happens when people don't have famous people around.
Right. He didn't do that. He didn't sell his parents' house because he didn't have to, because he had access to untold amounts of money that didn't belong to him, and torched a friendship and is going to jail.
Yes.
For a long time.
It's wild to me that he had access to the money.
Yeah, I mean, it's a big takeaway from this is how much everybody around Shohei Ohtani failed him in every conceivable way.
It was never particularly like much of a reach to say that Ohtani seemed more naive than many.
Yes.
And now it is clear that naive might be a little too generous of a term, but he needs a lot more support in this kind of area.
Okay, so is he just too trusting?
Clearly.
Yeah.
Yes.
But how did nobody around him, like, I'm sure you have accountants and stuff. How did nobody notice that this money was missing out of his account?
I think the idea was that it was always going in and out in small amounts or smaller amounts.
Yeah. It's, I don't know. You would think an accountant somewhere would catch it. That's literally their job.
Yeah, so the initial amount that was thrown around when this story first broke was that he had like something like $4.5 million in gambling debt. It turns out it's $16 million that was stolen from Ohtani, and that's in aggregate. That's in aggregate. So when you actually look at like how much he was betting, It's a mind-boggling number.
It's a lot.
It's a mind-boggling number. So the records show that he won a total of $142,256,769.74.
Which sounds really good
until you read that he lost a total of $182 million. $182,935,206.68.
I mean, in that context, though, it's really nice that they were willing to knock off $24 million from his debts, apparently.
Oh. His gambling losses totaled more than $40 million. I cannot even begin to comprehend that number.
I mean, like dozens of bets every day. Like, yeah. That's basically the thing.
Yeah, it's just the sheer numbers alone show you what a bad problem he had. But it's, if you dig deeper, you see like all the insanity of it, which the fact that he was betting on like college soccer, which he knows nothing about. Oh, that's another big thing that was revealed in this criminal complaint.
Yeah.
As far as the government can find, there's no record of him betting on baseball. Yes.
That is true. The other, I thought you were going to say the other thing that is pretty well established in the paperwork is that he is bad at gambling.
Very bad at it.
Very bad.
And I say it because he says it in text messages that are now part of the legal record.
I'm terrible at the sport betting thing, huh?
I'm like, what?
And look, you gotta, like, man, the bookie in that moment, there's like a one act play to be written by about the bookie and all of this, because it is a wild situation for him to be in.
And there's another, there's like so many instances of him just being like, can you bump me one more time? I swear this is the last time, man. I swear this is the last time. He even swears on his mother at one point that it's the last time.
God.
Spoiler alert, it was not the last
time. Not the last time.
I'm gonna say the bookie's gonna keep taking your money no matter what you say.
Yep. And yeah. And I will say, like, the other thing to keep in mind about all of this is that you could convince me that MLB would suppress investigations that were not useful to it, although I don't think they would do a very good job of it. But it is entirely another to think that the federal government of the United States is going to, like, cover up for a random, not even American player who has been ensnared in a gambling scandal.
Yeah.
Like, and I really hope that this sort of like settles the matter for basically everybody.
Well, at one point, Ipe even says, no, it's all me. It's over for me. Like, he flat out admits it.
Yes, which the conspiracy theorists say is a little too convenient. Right. But I think that the conspiracy theorists underestimate how stupid everyone involved with this is.
Yes.
Which is the thing that strikes me the most. And I'm not talking about Otani.
People will underestimate how awful gambling addictions are, and people will underestimate how stupid people are.
I'm not talking about Otani here, though. I would say I wouldn't call Shohei Otani stupid. I would call him naive. But everyone else involved in this, I would call very stupid. Like, Mizuhara is potentially the dumbest criminal I've ever seen.
Just not, I mean, I think probably what happened the most is that they noticed that their client wasn't really on top of anything, and they just didn't really put much effort into it.
The dumbest explanation is usually the right one when it comes to human nature.
Yep.
We're dumb people.
And so the dumbest moment in this, like, and isn't even like, doesn't even involve any of the, like, him being like, can you bump me again? Or like any of the money or the fact that he like impersonated Shohei Ohtani on the phone to banks. Like, that's also true. All of that is very dumb. But the dumbest part to me is when one of the bookies almost goes up to Ohtani and screws up the whole thing because he sees Ohtani walking his dog on the street and almost approaches him. Which would have broken the whole thing open. That was the same day that his dog was revealed to the world, by the way.
Oh my God. I'm telling you, there's this a one act play.
Movie.
I need this so bad. I realize that this is not like the major medium of the day, but
On or about November 17th, 2023, Bookmaker One messaged Mizuhara stating, hey Ipe, It's 2 o'clock on Friday. I don't know why you're not returning my calls. I'm here in Newport Beach and I see Otani walking his dog.
I know why he's not returning his calls.
I'm just going to go up and talk to him and ask how I can get in touch with me, with you, since you're not responding. Please call me back immediately. You must bring it to Otani while he was walking his dog to be like, hey, can you get eBay to call me back? He owes me millions of dollars.
Oh my God. Can you imagine if that actually happened? Can you imagine?
Yeah. No, I can't. I mean, the other thing, in addition to, like, the fact that this makes clear how much control Mizuhara had over Otani's finances, it's also just, like, how can you trust any of the translations that he made in a baseball context either for Otani? Someone tweeted, and like, he's not wrong. How can you trust that the negotiations with the Blue Jays, for example, were made accurately?
Or in good faith.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, it makes you wonder. And truly, like, I don't know. I know that a lot of people clearly weren't working with other translators, but always, like, do teams bring in their own translators? You'd think that they would want to.
Yeah. But then are the translators employees of the team, or are they employees of the person?
It depends. I mean in this case, Ipe was Otani's personal translator.
Yeah.
Because I think Hiro
and
is,
only
works
and
the
like
Mets.
And he really didn't want to work with anyone else.
But the Mets translators are Mets employees.
But I mean, Ipe was fired by the Dodgers, not by Otani.
Yeah.
Changed teams, he became a Dodgers employee.
Yeah, he was Otani's longtime personal translator, but Otani didn't sign his paycheck.
Right. The Dodgers did.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, again, we don't have time to go through all the insanity that exists in this criminal complaint, but suffice it to say that
you should. Listeners,
you should read it.
Not you, Allison. You did. Everyone else should.
Listener, you should read it. And to say that it completely exonerates Otani is probably a bit of a stretch, or like a bridge too far to say that it without a doubt exonerates Otani, but it all the facts point that way to him being completely innocent in all of this. The facts point to Ipe acting on his own without Otani's knowledge and stealing way more money from him than was initially reported. This man is going to prison.
For a long time.
Meanwhile, Otani is raking for the Dodgers, of course.
Good. Yeah. I do, like, everybody who sort of was like, who basically wanted him to be culpable out of, you know, distaste for him or for the Dodgers, I hope that they are feeling extra lousy about it today, because that's just a really terrible thing to wish upon a person.
I agree. It's kind of like, no matter what was true, like, it comes out terrible for him. So, like, it's sad no matter what.
He lost his best friend.
Either his best friend was stealing millions of dollars from him and everyone around him broke his trust, not just Ipe, but everyone around him broke his trust, which is terrible. Or he has a horrible gambling addiction, or is, you know, aiding and abetting a horrible gambling addiction. And none of that is good. It's if you, like, were rooting for his downfall or something, you're kind of a sad person, which I was accused of doing, by the way, by Dodgers fans on Twitter.
Oh, God.
It was just such a bad faith mischaracterization of my view of the whole thing. I did not want, I was not rooting for Shohei Ohtani's downfall. I
you
like
were
Shohei Ohtani.
Skeptical of a complete exoneration until you saw some pretty strong evidence to that point.
Until I saw new information and changed my opinion, like normal people do.
Hold on, are you telling me that people can learn and change?
Yeah.
What? That's a thing?
Yeah, huh. If you are, I mean, a lot of Dodgers fans are like, we always knew he was innocent. And like, you didn't know. You didn't know that.
You wanted to know that.
You always had planned to pretend he was innocent. Yeah. Is kind of what I think they're saying.
We didn't know.
No matter how it had turned out, we were going to say that he was innocent.
We didn't know if he was guilty or innocent at all in the beginning. We knew not very much at all. And if you were very firmly in one camp or the other, then you were deluding yourself. We needed to wait for more information. We have more information now. We're pretty sure he's innocent. And yeah, let's move on. I'm glad. I'm very glad to put on the record. Yay. I am very glad that he's not
a win for baseball.
That he's not a gambler, that Shohei Ohtani himself is not a gambling addict.
But he's not going to get banned from baseball.
He's not going to get banned from baseball. Just because I was critical of him not answering questions about this doesn't mean that I thought he was guilty. I did not.
Or that you wanted him to be.
Or that I wanted him to be. I didn't. Yeah. So this is, I am glad that the biggest scandal that has rocked baseball since the Astros cheating scandal has turned out to not actually have touched the player in question, really, beyond just his personal life being in shambles and him having to find better friends.
Yes.
Yeah.
At least you could take comfort in your new marriage, which I hope is going great.
Yeah. Like,
hope that's real good.
Yeah.
I hope his wife and dog are doing great.
Yeah, he is that. The dog will never betray him. We know that.
It's
that
true. Much. It's true. It goes Even to
a
show.
Bookie would be like, I'm not going to work with the dog.
It goes to show. Don't trust people. Trust your pets.
Trust pets, yeah.
So speaking of people who are shitty to people who they care about or purport to care about.
Our usual people being shitty things.
Usual. Julio Urias has been charged with five misdemeanors related to the allegations that he assaulted his wife in September.
This guy.
Yeah. So I don't know what that will mean as far as if he attempts to return to baseball and if someone will sign him in the future, probably, because I don't trust this league at all, despite the fact that it seems to have successfully blackballed Trevor Bauer. We don't know about these guys who are flying a little bit more under the radar and will shut up about it, as opposed to Trevor Bauer, who will never shut up a moment in his goddamn life. Other people know better than him and will shut up about it, and so we'll perhaps get another chance at baseball.
Even I shut up better than he does, and that's not saying a lot.
Exactly. Same. So yeah. He was placed on administrative leave in September. As far as I know, he is still on administrative leave. That we will keep you updated as that develops. Probably won't have any updates on that for a while, but that's just
he'll disappear off the face of the earth.
Thing that happened, yes. And another, so we're doing the sandwich as usual. So we want to now turn the mood to something better. We want to shout out. I mean, the situation.
I thought there was a real
good
sandwich for a second.
Dang.
Man, like the one that Laura Albanese had.
Oh, that was so good.
Oy. Anyway. The situation isn't a good thing, but the sports writing, the sports journalism in this case is very good, and we want to highlight it. RJ Anderson wrote a fantastic piece at CBS Sports that we highly recommend, and we will link in the show notes and tweets and such for this episode, about the Oakland Coliseum stadium workers who are losing their jobs because the A's are moving to their temporary home in Sacramento. So the Coliseum will no longer be their home. And all the workers who worked there are now going to be out of work.
Someone worked there for decades.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And needless to say, they don't have good things to say about John Fisher.
Can't blame like anyone for real. Ever had any, I don't know that I've ever heard a compliment of the man.
Yeah. So yeah, that continues to be a tragedy for many reasons. And, you know, we say a lot about the players who deserve better, the fan base that deserves better. And that's all true. But there are a lot of people that this touches when a team, when a city is robbed of its team. And stadium workers are a population who are massively impacted and aren't talked about enough. So I'm glad that someone wrote about this. And it's a really good piece and y'all should read it if you
haven't. Well, I think the Nationals might have just played them. And one of their writers said, you know, this is really hard for the workers. This is an awful situation to be in, but they couldn't have been nicer. They couldn't have been more helpful. So they're still, even though they're angry, they're still out there doing their jobs and still making it a pleasant experience for the people who do go to the games. So, I mean, it really shows you, you know, it's heartbreaking what's happening to these people, and yet they're still doing their thankless job right now.
Yeah. So shout out to those folks. And I'm glad that people are highlighting what they mean to the A's and the sacrifice that they are making against their will. Yeah, so we will end the show this week like we always do with walk-off wins, where each of us talks about something that is making us happy this week, baseball related or otherwise. Maggie Wiggin, what is your walk-off win for this week?
Well, I couldn't help but spend an extended period outside the last 2 days because it has been really, really beautiful. And yesterday in particular, I took the kids to the park. The big one just wanted to play video games. So I had his tablet running off of my phone's hotspot and he could play video games at the playground like a good kid. And there was an ice cream truck stop.
Ooh.
First of the year. I had chocolate dip. And it was real, real good. And it was real beautiful. And I just felt like $100 all weekend long. So, and into today. Today has been glorious.
It's amazing how much your mood changes when it's nice out. I just felt so much lighter and happier today.
Serotonin all levels through the roof.
Yes.
I wore sandals today. I've been on sundresses for 3 days now, but sandals today. And it's pretty exciting developments all around.
Indeed. Linda Cerevich, what is your walk-off win for this week?
My walk-off win is it's Hudson Valley Restaurant Week.
Ooh.
Which is, for those unfamiliar, I think Long Island and New York City do their separate restaurant weeks.
Yes.
But it's when restaurants give you a price fixed menu. So you get an appetizer, entree, and dessert all for, I think, there's different ones. It's either like $30 or $40. And so it allows you to try nice restaurants that probably I wouldn't have gone to otherwise.
See, I'm jealous because the DC tiers are $40 and $50. Anyway, continue.
Oh, I haven't done
New York City Restaurant Week in a hot minute, and I am even afraid to look at how much it is now.
Lunch, I think, is $25 if you do lunch or brunch. I think that's $25. And then it's $35 or $45 for dinner. So me and my boyfriend tried out a new restaurant. It was super fancy. And he had pasta with elk sausage. So I tried it. I had never had elk before, but it was actually kind of good.
Is it like venison-y?
It is. It's hard. Yeah. It's kind of like a braised beef kind of texture to it.
Mm.
And it's kind of like...
It's gamey, so it'd probably be like really low and slow.
Yeah. And yeah, it's just kind of like very tender. So the texture is kind of like more beefy than like a regular sausage. And then I got steak. So I was like, when else are you ever going to get steak for this price? So I'm like, I better go for the steak. And then the cream puffs for dessert. Oh, the cream puffs.
Sometimes they like phone it in on dessert for these things. So I always appreciate when there's a really solid dessert offering.
Yeah. Yeah. Because usually it's just like, whatever they're trying to get rid of. But no, these cream puffs.
It's our sorbet trio.
Yes. That's what it usually is. That's what Jesse got. He got the sorbet with what?
Was it good?
It was passion fruit. So he did. Mm. He said the first bite, he was a little put off by it. But then he said as he kept eating it, it got better.
I love me some passion fruit.
Passion fruit's my favorite. So
yeah, it's, I like it, especially after a big meal. Like if I was eating a bunch of steak, I would definitely want passion passion fruit, something for dessert.
It's refreshing after a big meal.
Oh, I forgot Aroldis Chapman's on the Pirates. Can we please kick ass? I love
that guy.
Boo. No, this is walk-off wins. We're keeping it positive.
Yeah. True.
And then now Wednesday, I'm trying out a different restaurant with my friends. So restaurant week, if you come across a restaurant week, definitely take advantage because it's delicious and you will definitely get a good meal.
Yeah, love Michael it. And I have had some pretty good meals thanks to DC Restaurant Week. For sure.
Yeah, whenever we do it, because they do it 2 times a year. So every we take advantage anytime we can.
My walk-off win for this week is also partially about the warmer weather because the serotonin has just been going crazy. And I am so much happier when it's nice.
That vitamin D, baby.
Mm-hmm.
It's been great. I've worn shorts the past couple of days and I've been very happy about it. But part of that warmer weather is that Michael and I on Saturday, we went to the DC Beer Festival, which was at Nats Park. And so that was very fun. I have been to the DC Beer Festival before, but not for many years and not since I moved here.
Which is amazing because it seems like I would have been like assumed it was your walk off win this time last year.
I know, right?
So you, how did you miss it?
I think it's because in the past, it's either been the weekend before or the weekend of the Cherry Blossom 10 miler. And so I always run that. And so I'm not doing the last time I did the beer festival. I was young enough where I could do the beer festival and run the race the next day and not have it be a problem. I am not that person anymore. So, you know, the past like however many years I've run the race, so I haven't done the beer festival. This year, the race and the beer festival were two separate weekends. They were successive weekends. So like the 10 miler was like last weekend and this weekend was the beer festival, which I think is better planning on their part, but they're also partially constrained by when the Nats are home and when they're away. So obviously the Nats were away. They were playing Oakland, I think, right? So they were away, so they were not home, so they were able to have the beer festival this weekend. But I also didn't run the Cherry Blossom this year because I'm still rehabbing my knee injury, so I'm not at 10 mile shape yet. I am recovered from a standpoint of like I can run now in short bursts, but I cannot run 10 miles yet. I'm not ready for that. But I was able for those two reasons to do the DC Beer Festival this year for the first time in like a decade. And it was great. Michael and I had an awesome time. It's a bunch of like DC and Maryland and Baltimore breweries, some of which we knew already and some of which were new to us. And it was fantastic. And a big highlight was that we ran into a listener while we were there, which was great.
Oh my God, I love it.
I know. Really it was cool. Awesome.
A Pato in the wild.
Michael and I were both wearing Mets gear and he was wearing Mets gear. So I said, let's go Mets. And he was like, I listened to A Pod of Their Own. And I was like, you are awesome. so that was really, really happy. So
I got to dig up my tote bag. Got to make sure that's like front and center.
Front and center, visible at all times when you're out and about. Yes. So yeah, it was a really good time. I had a really nice time and the weather was nice. So that made it even better. So yeah, beer festivals are even better when they're at ballparks. It was just like the vibes were immaculate. I had a great time. It was funny because the Nationals were literally playing, like they were away, but they were playing while the beer festival was happening. And inside the some of the clubs were open so you could sit inside if you wanted to. They were showing not the game. They were showing like other stuff on ESPN. Oh. And I was like, isn't the team that plays in this stadium literally playing right now? Why don't you have Madsen on? Come on, man.
Yeah, that's bad.
Fun times. So that was
never.
Nobody wants to watch the Nationals.
But I had some really delicious beers and I enjoyed myself a great deal. And so did Michael. So that's my walk-off win for this week. While you wait for the next episode to drop next week, you can go to homerunapplesauce.com to check out all of our fantastic pods. You can support our work by going to patreon.com/homerunapplesauce. You can get in touch with the show by email, aa.apodoftheirown@gmail.com. You can also get in touch with us on social media. We are at a pod of their own on all of the things. If you want to participate in our fundraiser that we still have going on for Baseball for All, please donate a certain increment of $5. For every $5 you donate, you get an entry into our raffle to win cool prizes. Reach out to us by email or DM us on social media with your receipt. I've heard more than one person say that they've had trouble getting a receipt that has like the amount. It just says like, thank you for donating. It doesn't have the amount. Just tell us how much it was. We trust you guys that you won't cheat. So just tell us how much you donated. And
it seems like
the
kind of karma that would really kind of directly bite you in the rear.
Exactly.
So I would just not do that.
If you lie to us about something this silly and about charity.
This far into a podcast from us, who was that kind of person? Yeah. That doesn't seem right.
Exactly. We our listeners are not that sort of people. So we trust you guys. Just tell us how much you donated and we'll enter you. Please subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcasts from. Just search Home Run Applesauce and you will find our entire feed of pods right there. Please rate and review the show. It really helps people find it. You can find each of us on social media. I am at Petite PhD. Where are you, Linda?
At Linda Sarvage.
And you, Maggie?
At Maggie162.
The original intro and outro music to this podcast is by Bunga. Let's go Mets. And don't forget, there's no crying in pain.